March is coming in like a lion, and so are the politicos. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Very good to be back with you, Barry. I'm happy to be sitting here this morning in front of my microphone, looking at some of the serious things and some of the, let's face it, not so serious things going on in the world today.
And that's about all we need to talk about the Democratic Party, though, Chuck. No, I know. There's a lot of things that are going on, and of course, we're going to try to cover as many of them as we can get to today. It's been a fairly tumultuous week, Charles. Not only are we heading toward a spring full bore, although you would have thought it was already here, at least in my area, when we had highs earlier in the week touching 80 in February. And then a Arctic clipper that's moving in that pushed a torrential downpour throughout the rest of the week. And I pray for all those who are listening that nobody had any trouble with floods and being flooded out or wind damage from all of the strong storms that came through the area over a couple of days. But, you know, that's the whole thing. You know, the old saying that, you know, March will come in like a lamb or and go out like a lion, or it'll come in like a lion and go out like a lamb. Makes me think that the end of March is going to be very, very peaceful, because the beginning of March was anything but. And, the weather is just one part of it. The other part of it is, Charles, is that there were a couple of fairly major things that happened politically here in this first few days of March. As a matter of fact, it actually happened just right before the beginning of March. Maybe that was the cause of all that bad weather. You know, when you get what would be considered a hot air front that pushes up and blocks cold air from keeping, you know, from going through, it builds up, and behind the blockage is where you get all the strong storms. So maybe something that happened in D.C. this week is what's causing all of the bad weather throughout the Midwest during the rest of the week.
Well, no, I don't think so, and I'll tell you why. Because if that had been the case, it would have been much warmer, since it's all hot air.
And it depends on who you ask as whether or not there was hot air or not. And I would say that, yes, there was plenty of hot air from both sides.
Well, let's face it. About it. There usually is.
There usually is. That's right. Well, of course, what we're talking about is the fact that the newly elected president, Donald Trump, made his first address to a joint session of Congress. Now, Chuck, this was an interesting piece because you had some theatrics that were taking place during this whole scenario. You know, you've had for a while now, there's been a resounding chorus of boo birds, I would like to call them, whether that's Democrats who supported Hillary or whether that's folks who are on the Never Trump bandwagon, which, okay, folks, you could still be on that bandwagon, but it's up on jacks and the wheels have been stolen and it's not moving. So
yeah, it's done for now. Although, okay, here's where these guys can do their damage, the Never Trumper guys. There's a whole bunch of them in the Congress. And there's a whole bunch of them. I would say that the Senate has more than the Congress.
I think you're absolutely correct.
Start thinking about it. Ben Sasse, John McCain.
John McCain is the first.
Lindsey Graham. Rob Portman is going to be in the closet, but for the most part, he's a GOP establishment guy, so he's going to be. You're going to hear him say, well, you know, I just can't support the president on this particular thing. You're going to hear a lot of that out of Rob Portman. And then you can pat yourself on the back, ladies and gentlemen, for not getting rid of him when you had your chance. I did not vote for him in the primary or in the general. So I don't have to pat myself on the back. What did I want Ted Strickland as the senator? You know, that's the argument that's generally made. Well, then you must have wanted Ted Strickland as the senator. No, definitely not. But I didn't want either of them. And I realized that I'm not stupid enough to think that my little vote for independent candidates was going to amount to a hill of beans. But nonetheless, I have clear conscience on that particular issue. And
those aren't the only ones though.
They're rife throughout the Senate. The Senate tends to be a far more liberal body than the House in most circumstances.
You know, I just want to pick up on something you said there, because you said something about you did it with a clear conscience, and it's like, that's where I think a lot of people, they can't process that, because they have been indoctrinated into the idea that there's only really two parties, and if you don't vote for the one, you're actually supporting the other, and if you vote a third party, then you're basically voting for the worst party. You know, by default, because you're not giving your vote to the best party, which is their party, obviously. And, you know, we've gone over this a number of times, but, you know, the point is that, you know, my wife and I were talking about this, and we're kind of like, well, you know what? We didn't vote for the man, but we're not necessarily completely disappointed with much of the policy progress that's taken place in the last 30 plus days of the new Trump administration.
So far, I'm with you on that. Exactly. That's exactly the way I feel about it.
And, you know, and it just reflects this whole idea that if you follow your conscience that's revealed by God's word, that, you know, there are blessings that come out of that. And some of those blessings are, no, we didn't compromise what we believed to be right, but by the power of God, things are working in a way that is beneficial to his people. I don't want to get down the road or people misunderstand that I really cringe when I see on social media these memes and things where there's scripture next to a picture of Donald Trump as if he is the prophetic answer to all of messianic scripture. And it's like, whoa, stop right there, ladies and gentlemen. That is really heretical. Let's just be quite honest about it. That's just complete out and out fabrication.
I want to go off slightly on a tangent on that. I've noticed, unfortunately, that the current state of the church of believers, there are certain ways of viewing doctrine that lend themselves to a kind of a dangerous idea, like the idea that some Donald Trump is the answer to prayer. In some ways, he is, because God essentially does intervene after prayer. However, when I see those things, it scares me silly. Because one thing I've noticed about Christians, unfortunately, is they're the worst bandwagon jumpers I've ever seen. And they're just like the secular world. They will ignore a number of things. And you'll find yourself, if you're critical of anything, like, for instance, I've been very critical of Donald Trump on his stand on the Fourth Amendment, asset forfeiture and that kind of thing. I'm very critical about that. That it's one of the reasons I'm glad I didn't vote for him, was the fact that he is all about asset forfeiture. Well, bad, 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 bad. However, if you're critical of him, all of a sudden, you know, it's sort of like that old movie where you're not a member of an Invasion of the Body Snatchers. When suddenly they point at you and go, because you're not assimilated yet. Well, I'm not going to be assimilated on that particular issue. And immediately when it goes over to name calling, I'm suddenly a liberal because I'm not supporting Trump on the Fourth Amendment and you know, his wanton destruction of the Fourth Amendment. Well, sorry, I was against George W. Bush when he did it, and I was against Barack Obama when he did it, and I'm going to be against Donald Trump when he does it. Those are the facts. And really, Christians need to open up and have a critical eye open and stop this thing about, oh, you know, because he's so much better than his predecessor, therefore he's a messianic figure. We tend in Christian circles to look at people and say, oh, he's my leader. If he says this, then it must be right. Well, okay, I'm a natural contrarian. if everybody's jumping on the bandwagon, I tend to be the guy that says, there's something wrong here. Sorry, I'm a natural contrarian. It's just like I'm immediately, my ears are perked up and my eyes are sharpened, and I'm listening when all of a sudden everybody's jumping on the bandwagon and saying, oh, this is great, this is great, this is great, this is great. Usually, I hate to tell you this, I'm the guy who says, I'm not so sure it's great. And you ask the question, and what happens when you start asking the questions? What if this and this and this and this? Oh, you're one of those. You know, it's been my lot in life all my life. I've always been the guy that asks questions. And I think you have too, Barry.
I'm always the guy that at church functions, I'm sitting alone at the end of a picnic table.
Well, yeah, I don't get that bad. But I know you don't either. I've met some of the people you go to church with. I know better than that.
That's right. Our church is too small for us not to all sit at the same table.
Right. If you're not, yeah. That's it. And it's that you have lovely people in your church. It's the same with my church. Yes. People are lovely. And when we do talk politics, things get interesting. So just as they are here, I'm sure we'll get feedback on this. I don't care. I'll stop looking at politicians as saviors. And stop seeing Christian leaders as someone who must be followed at all costs. There are plenty of Christian leaders out there. You lead over there. I'll be over here watching as you lemmings jump over the cliff. Because in many cases, that's what's going on.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. Well, you know, Chuck, there's an awful lot of that lemming jumping over the cliff thing. As a matter of fact, though, as we're talking here, I'm looking over some of the announcements that's being made about people who are lining up for running for office next year, because next year is a major year for the state of Ohio. Every other cycle off of a presidential election, even numbered year, you have a gubernatorial and all the statewides are running. And of course, everybody's lining up for that. And it's like, you're trying to keep a tally sheet of who's going where and who is and isn't going to be a legitimate contender for this. And speaking of tangents, I just want to run on this one for just a minute because we just had two announcements this week. We had three announcements this week, two of them positive and one of them not so positive. And I mean positive in the sense of people saying they're getting in versus getting out. In the race for governor, and we talked about on the Republican side a little bit, there's really four candidates that are looking like they're wanting to run, which is Attorney General Mike DeWine, Secretary of State John Husted, Lieutenant Governor Mary Taylor, and U.S. Congressman Jim Renacci from the Medina-Worcester area. So they're all kind of like poning around, and Mary Taylor actually made it formal this week, Chuck. She announced her campaign committee, so she is all in for running for governor. So we got that. We've got one there that's made a notation. Now, because Husted's running for governor and giving up the Secretary of State slot that he'd have to give up anyway because he's termed out of it, we've had another announcement this week, and this is a name familiar to you and maybe to some of our listeners because we probably used it in vain a number of times on this but State Representative Dorothy Palanda has announced that she is running for the Ohio Secretary of State slot next year. Now, this doesn't really come as a big surprise. I think Palanda, though, could have had another round in the House or run for another term in the House in 2018. I believe she's in her third term, not her fourth. But she's chosen to go run statewide because she believes that the state needs her service. I'm not so sure that's true.
Yeah,
she may end up with a primary because State Senator Frank LaRose from Akron is also considering running for the Secretary of State slot, although my little birds tell me that the powers that be within Republicandom, i.e. the Kasich inner circle, may be trying to convince Frank not to give Dorothy a primary and thus to get him over into one of the other seats that are coming over. Now, very interesting. We'll see how that develops because LaRose has hinted around about Secretary of State, but he's not committed yet. And with Palanda making a full commitment now that that's where she's going to. Then the question remains, does he then jump in to give her a primary and thus create an issue for the Republican Party? Or does he, you know, look somewhere else? Now, for LaRose, that somewhere else is just running for re-election to a Senate seat. So it'd be interesting to see how that's going to work. Now, on the governor's side, on the Democrat side, now this is where it gets fun, Chuck. First of all, the state Democratic Party is, just like the National Democratic Party, somewhat in disarray. They really are having trouble finding people who have got the chops in the background to actually make runs, because, you know, you've got people like John Cranley down in Cincinnati, but he's smart enough to stay citywide, so he's running for re-election as mayor and not for statewide office. But an Ohio Senator, Joe Schiavone. Now, remember that name, Joe Schiavone. He is the Senate Minority Leader, and he has announced this week as well that he plans to run for governor on the Democratic ticket. Now, Chuck, before I said that name twice, how many times had you heard Joe Schiavone's name?
Well, let's see. If I hear it one more time, that'll be twice.
That'll be twice. That's right, exactly. He has no name ID. He's the minority leader for the Senate Democrats. Now, he's probably known within Democrat political circles, but as far as the grassroots bases and the rest of the Ohio voting public, Schiavone, nobody knows who this guy is. You know, and that's great that he's wanting to run, because, you know, another Democrat made the decision not to seek a nomination for governor, and that was U.S. Congressman Tim Ryan, who honestly was the Democrats' best hope so far of getting a high-profile name that actually has some statewide name ID into the race, because right now it's not looking like they have been very successful in trying to court former Attorney General Rich Cordray. Because that's their dream person, is to get Cordray into this race. But I think Cordray's smart enough to realize that, you know, he's now out. He served in Obama's White House as consumer counsel or something of that nature, and he probably could write his own ticket on K Street as a lobbyist. And why come back to Ohio to run for a seat that most likely will not switch hands next year? Let's just be quite honest about it, Chuck. What the Dems were hoping for is a massive dissatisfaction in the public eye with the way the new president is behaving and the way Congress is acting. Wow. Remember I said that Donald Trump had just gave a first address to a joint session of Congress on Tuesday night. Even CNN, one of the most liberal news media outlets, 4 of 5 respondents to CNN's poll about how they think the president did for that speech were positive. 4 out of 5, Chuck.
Yep.
Including CNN's own commentator and reliable liberal, Van Jones.
Yeah. I found that interesting as well. Of the Obama administration
fame. Van Jones is taking so much heat from the left right now on Twitter because he basically said at the moment when Donald Trump introduced the widow of the slain naval officer, he became president of the United States. As if that was a defining moment in the Trump administration, was that with the way Trump handled all of that stuff and the respect that he showed and the lack, and coming to find out now, there was an awful lot that was going on behind the scenes, very positive, that Trump and the administration and Sean Spicer, the press secretary, they didn't put out in the public eye. There was an awful lot that was being done behind the scenes by the president for the widow and the family of this fallen officer. Now, remember, this is the one the Democrats are complaining that, you know, Donald Trump made the decision over for dinner to send people into Kuwait and thus get the, or Yemen or wherever it was, and get this guy killed, as if, you know, he was he's a tyrant who just sat there and while he was having his filet mignon said go kill that soldier.
Right.
That isn't anywhere near how any of this happened. Trump is actually trying to clean up some very big messes that Barack Obama left him in these regions of the world, these hot spots. And, you know, it happens, Chuck. Now, are the Democrats going to do this, Chuck? Is every time a U.S. Officer or U.S. soldier gets killed overseas now, it's all going to be, you know, Trump, you know, ordered his execution.
Oh, of course it is.
Because you know what? That shoe fits very snugly on the other foot, too, because how many U.S. service people died under Barack Obama in wars that we had no business being in? This is from the man who, when he was running for president the first time in the 2008 cycle, said he was going to pull us out of all of these various conflicts. But yet, who over 8 years doubled down and became a bigger warmonger than even people would claim George W. Bush was.
Well, okay, yes, that's true. What happened with the news media? As we've been discussing with the news media, the news media reports what's convenient for their particular agenda at what time. It got ignored. How much did you hear about Afghanistan and Iraq and all that business? You know, we did hear things in the quote-unquote fight against ISIL. He loved to talk about the fight against ISIL, except when you look really closely at the whole mess, at some places we were funding ISIL. In some battles, and in other places, we were fighting ISIL or ISIS. Basically, you have to remind people every once in a while what these things. Islamic State, Iraq, and the Levant was what President Barack Obama called ISIL. And
right.
Levant is all the territory along the Mediterranean, along the eastern shore of the Mediterranean. That's known as the Levant. And honestly, that was an expansion of, because the way ISIS went was Islamic State, Iraq, and Syria. ISIL was actually an attempt to expand the boundaries of where ISIS was really active. And I always wondered what the propaganda thing was with the ISIL versus ISIS. Everybody except the president and his State Department called it ISIS. So that being said, though, we were funding both sides of the conflict. In some places where they were fighting people we didn't like, we were giving them money and arms. In other places where they were fighting people we liked, we were fighting them. We were giving the people we liked money and arms to fight off ISIS. Barry, is it any wonder that the people of the Middle East, the government leaders in the Middle East, have no idea whether to trust us or not?
Right. Yeah, you're right. When you're double dealing and playing both sides, neither side's going to trust you.
And you know, who can blame them?
No, it's ridiculous. But, you know, this is the situation. So you have Trump who's speaking, and, of course, you know, like I said, Van Jones is taking heat for it, for his positive comments. But it looks like even among liberals, and I'm assuming that CNN's respondents are probably mostly liberal, they had to admit that, well, gosh, you know, he actually did a good job, because Trump actually stayed away from doing anything like he'd been doing before with some of his tweets and things of that nature and picking fights. He really came in and said, hey, this is what we've done so far, and these are the things we're planning to do or trying to do, get done to help the American people and, you know, get jobs back in this country and to, you know, get the respect back that this country deserves. And across the board, many people are praising that particular approach that he took. But there was one Democrat, well, actually, there was most of the Democrats didn't. Now, for one, Maxine Waters, Democrat from California, boycotted the speech. She refused to go. Well, that's fine. Actually, when it comes right down to it, Chuck, if you think about this, it got her a little bit of a quick media hit, but who did it benefit more than anybody for her not showing up for this speech?
Her.
No, it benefited Donald Trump. He doesn't have to deal with her. You know, he can say that, you're not trying to work with us, and so he can marginalize her at this point because she marginalized herself.
Well, that's true.
And you know who benefited the most? Donald Trump actually benefited the most from Maxine Waters throwing this little temper tantrum. Now, she wasn't alone because the majority, and I say the majority, not all, the majority of the Women's Democratic Caucus, led by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senator Elizabeth Warren, all decided that they were going to make a statement of their solidarity with women by wearing white to the joint session of Congress and then showing these big blocks of women in white dresses and white suits, to catch media attention. And, of course, it caught a lot of attention. And I have to laugh, Chuck, because some of the memes that are out there on social media off of this, well, you know what, guys, you had it coming. Most of the memes are now showing these women, and somebody draws in the picture, white hoods.
Yeah. Made because, it too easy. Yeah, made it
because,
too easy.
Because, yeah, they made it easy because what they're really doing, and what these memes are showing, is the history that the KKK, you know, the ultra-right-wing group that was supposedly a big part of Donald Trump's winning majority, was actually started, formed, and carried on by Democrats. And so you've got that whole meme that just begged for somebody to run with it when Nancy Pelosi and company decided to get all of the women to wear white. Now, I saw a picture, Chuck, online of the women, the Democratic women, all standing there, and there was one Democratic woman that was wearing something that wasn't really white. It was more of a lavender color. And it was funny because they had her way off in the far corner of the picture. And it was hilarious because I recognized who it was right away. It was Democratic representative from Hawaii, Tulsi Gabbard, who was a big Bernie Sanders supporter and who is at odds with Nancy Pelosi. So they had to put her in the picture because they wanted to show this women's solidarity thing, but she did not wear the white, you know, the stark white jacket or dress or blouse or whatever. She was wearing something like lavender and like a dark pant suit or skirt or something of that nature. And I had to laugh when I saw the picture. And I'm like, okay, how soon will it be before Tulsi Gabbard is considered an independent and will not be allowed to caucus with the Democrats?
Well, it depends. Can you be thrown out of a party? I suppose so. I mean, there's precedent for this, and that is there was a president of the United States that was removed from his party and served as an independent for his entire term. Do you know who that is, just off the top of your head? A little trivia question.
Teddy Roosevelt?
Nope. No, he removed himself.
He removed himself. Okay, so you're talking about somebody who was actually removed.
A sitting president of the United States who was kicked out of his party.
Oh, wow. My brain keeps screaming Garfield, but
nope.
I know that's not right.
Way back further than that.
It's way back. It's not Buchanan either, is it?
Nope. Nope. Okay,
Johnson?
Nope. Okay, way back further than that. John Tyler.
Tyler. Oh, yes, yes, that's right. Okay, all right.
When William Henry Harrison died...
Once you said the name, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right.
When William Henry Harrison died, John Tyler was sworn in. Remember, William Henry Harrison served 30 days.
Right. He contracted pneumonia during the swearing in March and ended up dying in office from
April.
Complications from pneumonia.
Yeah, in April.
In April, yeah.
So William Henry Harrison served out the vast bulk of William Henry Harrison's term. John Tyler did. And Tyler immediately came out. He was a Whig. Okay? And that may not mean anything to anybody. It gets murky as we go back further what the party identities were. However, one of the hallmarks of the Whigs was National Bank. They all liked the idea of the National Bank. Well, John Tyler didn't like the idea of the National Bank. And he vetoed a bill that got sent over to his desk, and he was unceremoniously removed from the roles of the Whig Party for that. So he served as an independent in his entire presidency.
Well, you know, he could have done like the individual who the Democratic Party picked to give the response to Trump's speech Tuesday night, former Kentucky Governor Steve Beshear, and he could just have announced that he was with every party. That's what Steve Beshear did. Now, folks, if you remember anything about Beshear, one of the things that sticks in most people's minds is the fact that Steve Beshear was okay with prosecuting Clerk of Courts Kim Davis, who wouldn't issue marriage licenses to homosexual couples. He was okay with her going to jail and being thrown in jail, and as a matter of fact, had his attorney general do just that. Now, he summarily lost his reelection effort to now Governor Matt Bevin in Kentucky. So the Democrats, thinking how wonderful it would be to get someone who's a rock star like that to give the response, asked Steve Beshear to give the official response of the Democratic Party to Donald Trump's joint address to Congress. And so during this response, he was sitting in a diner in somewhere in Kentucky. You know, we have to be a populist and show we're a man of the people. It's probably the first time Steve Beshear's been in a diner in his life. But, you know, he comes in here and he starts and says, he goes, "I'm a proud Democrat, but first and foremost, I'm a proud Republican and Democrat and mostly American."
Yeah.
Well, what part of that is not American, Steve? That's what I want to know. But no, here it is, folks, because, you know, if I remember correctly, Chuck, he's right, because I think Beshear flipped parties. If I remember correctly, I think he started out, like, way back as a Republican and switched to a Democratic Party, because at that time in Kentucky, in order to win higher office, you had to be a...
Oh, you had to be a Democrat.
Democrat.
However, the back of that has been broken. Whether Beshear was ever a Republican or not, I don't have any clue. I don't think he does either. Honestly, from the mess that we saw in this thing, I'm really not sure that Beshear knew what he was. He looked awfully confused. And this was essentially a gift to the Republican Party, because this particular appeal was not particularly appealing. And it really got some derision from the more comedic minded in the Republican circles. I dug up an article out of the Conservative Treehouse that basically said, first of all, this thing was exceptionally boring. The title of the article was weird. No. A Democrat's replace rebuttal speech with Lunesta sleeping aid commercial.
And honestly, that was probably more engaging than Steve Beshear's speech.
Yeah, and the author, we'll post this link. By the way, all the links, all the shows are up to date on the website. So if you're looking for those, you can go out there and see our past shows. But he claims, quote, "I swear there was a voiceover running in the background of Beshear's speech saying, contact your doctor if you experience burning, tingling in the hands, arms, feet, or legs, changes in appetite, constipation, diarrhea, difficulty keeping balance, dizziness, daytime drowsiness, dry mouth or throat, gas, headaches, heartburn, mental slowing, or problems with attention or memory, stomach pain, or tenderness, or any uncontrollable shaking of a part of the body. If you don't immediately walk away when drug commercials come on." I'm always amazed when pharmaceutical commercials will come on and it's like, "Well, you will die of TB, but your psoriasis will go away." I'm like, "Well, you know what? I'll take the psoriasis. I'll pass on the death by TB."
Yes. Oh, hey, I did a little backgrounding on Steve Beshear, and he had not switched parties. He's been a Democrat his entire life. I just want to get that clarified. But another thing with Beshear is, man, you talk about a track record if you really want to offend people. Beshear, when he was Attorney General of Kentucky, was the one who had the Ten Commandments removed from the state's classrooms after the Stone versus Graham decision. He fought with everybody and their brother, and the way he got in to be governor was because he promised to expand casino gambling in order to fund various projects that they were trying to get done in Kentucky. So, yeah, if you're all in favor of, you know, taking God out of the classroom and also in favor of expanding gambling and thus hurting people who are, you know, in economic straits to start with, Well, that's a great guy to put up as the response to Donald Trump's state, you know, his address to Congress. Hilarious. I mean, where do the Democrats, is their bench this week? Is their bench really this week, Chuck? I mean, how in the world, when, and of course, what else is Kentucky known for? I mean, what is a big part of the commerce of the state of Kentucky?
Oh, bourbon. Whiskey.
Well, yeah, okay. Well, that's somewhat, yes, they've got like a history, but as far as it gets right down to, it's coal.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Eastern Kentucky is coal.
What did Donald Trump just do?
Oh,
he just issued rules, basically lightening regulations and fixing issues related to the coal industry as part of his campaign promises. So here you've got the governor of Kentucky who basically tried to run coal into the ground. And this, the Democrats think that's going to help them win back these states that they lost? I mean, I don't think there's going to be another Democrat winning at the presidential level in the state of West Virginia, probably for the mine and your foreseeable lifetime, if the way this is going. And Kentucky may be the same thing. I mean, you know, this is a situation where the Democratic Party is really just absolutely tone deaf.
Wow. But that's been the hallmark of how the Democrats have operated really since the, Barack Obama's second election. They have made the assumption that they've got the quote-unquote, they've got the momentum, and therefore they can go, 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 go. Well, how's that worked out? They've been,
not so much.
Yeah, they've been on the go, 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 go for essentially really the last 8 years, and what it has done is it has cost them control of both houses of Congress and the presidency, because Donald Trump is a backlash against the last 4 years. There's no other way to explain it, Barry. Donald Trump is a backlash.
You're right.
But Donald Trump is a backlash, and in fact, you know, now we're seeing the left using, well, actually abusing the techniques of the Tea Party, showing up at town hall meetings and making a stink and all that. Well, folks, that got done earlier and better, and the reason it got done better was because the Tea Party was not interested in burning down buildings where the meetings might have been held, to make a statement. The Tea Party would not have done that. They're not so sure about the people that are showing up now, because if you recall, right after or right around between the election and right around the inauguration of Donald Trump, there were essentially riots in the streets. There were no riots in the streets when Barack Obama got elected.
Still,
boy, there's a Freudian slip, huh?
That's still yet to happen, I think.
Yeah. No, got elected. No, there was none of that. Was there grumbling? Oh, sure, there was grumbling. People were very unhappy, and they said, basically, what did conservatives say when Barack Obama got elected both times? You're not going to be happy with this. And what turns out to be the case? You're not happy with this. Therefore, you unelected him as quickly as you could. It was interesting to watch Barack Obama unravel in the last 2 years of his second term. Because it was sort of like watching Bill Clinton unravel. The charisma was gone. The shine was off. And people were starting to recognize what they were seeing. Well, that's going to happen with any president.
Yes, it will.
There were people who weren't happy with Ronald Reagan at the end. A lot of people forget that. There were a lot of people that were unhappy with Ronald Reagan at the end, but they were still happier than they were with George H.W. Bush, who essentially looked at the American public and lied openly to their face.
Read my lips, no new taxes,
yeah.
Yes, that's the famous death line for George Bush's political career.
Exactly.
But anyhow, Chuck, you know, you've got these situations here. Like I said, the Democrats are in disarray. And, you know, I want to pop over to this just real quick, because you and I both laughed our heads off about this. And that is, you know, when you're in disarray, what do you end up doing? You end up going back to something that's convenient, comfortable, known quantity, because you're afraid that if you do something different, it'll be a wrong move and it'll just dig the hole deeper, right?
Yeah.
But what usually happens when you do that? You end up digging the hole deeper, right?
Almost every time.
That's the reason why in an article over on the American Mirror, the headline says, "It begins. Hillary for mayor signs appearing around New York City." Boy, talk about somebody doubling down on stupid.
Yes.
here's really what it gets down to. Yes, and there are photos, Chuck, and I don't know if they did these up and somebody, you know, stuck them up, took a photo, and then brought it down, and it's the same sign all over the place. You know, but, you know, there's signs on shopkeepers' doors, there's signs on the subway trains, in the hall, signs on billboards, you know, all around, supposedly in places in New York City. Now, I looked at these signs, of course. Number one, they have no disclaimer on them, so, you know, this is probably just some stunt. But the article goes on to talk about the fact that maybe these are out here because somebody's being encouraged by what they're seeing in some polls. Because Quinnipiac University had polled voters in New York City and gave them a choice in a hypothetical matchup between current incumbent mayor Bill de Blasio, a Democrat, and as an independent, Hillary Clinton. And, well, according to Quinnipiac University, Chuck, Clinton trounces de Blasio 49-30% in that hypothetical matchup. So maybe you're starting to see the groundswell of a Hillary for mayor, you know, recruitment process, that they're going to try to convince her to get back in there and fix all the problems in New York City. Or maybe they're just digging the hole a little deeper.
Well, okay. Without the endorsement, my thing is, this sounds like a test run to see what the reaction is.
Now, oh, yeah. Well, and according to the polling, the reaction's pretty big. Among Democrats, Clinton leads 61-29%, and among independents, 45-31%. Republicans supposedly back de Blasio 28-18%.
Well, in New York City, a Republican is truly a rhino. My aunt was virtually a lifelong resident of New York City. She lived in Manhattan. She was a professional musician. And what's interesting about that, she was a member of some very conservative groups. And her funeral was interesting to watch, but we won't go into that because of the two groups she was member, you know, the two circles that she traveled in. But she used to joke about meetings of her very conservative groups would happen in phone booths. There just really aren't that many strong conservatives in New York City. And if you do come out as a strong conservative in New York City, sometimes you get things other than being ostracized. I mean, it can lead to physical assault. My brother, I can remember, wore some, when he was much younger, he wore some t-shirt with a conservative slogan on it in New York City, and this is in the 70s. And he was threatened physically with assault over his t-shirt. When was the last time you heard of anybody with a liberal thing on their t-shirt out here in the Midwest being threatened with assault? Oh, it might happen in a bar, maybe, if somebody's had way too much to drink. But in New York, it was openly on the subway, in sandwich shops, people not having been primed with alcohol at all. It was threats.
Well, you're making a big assumption there.
Well,
maybe they weren't primed with alcohol.
Well, I'll be quite honest. Having spent time in New York City, I would have to be primed with a great deal of alcohol to be talked into staying. I don't mind the subway. I don't mind the subway so much. Just there are certain places that you don't go on the subway at certain times of the day or night.
Right.
You know, and it can get rough. But that being said, yeah, it's New York is a different place to be And it wouldn't shock me at all if, you know, the Republicans in New York essentially are non-existent. I mean, yes, they're out there, but they are ultra-leftist Republicans. No other way to describe them, for the most part. I mean,
well,
you know, it's not a hard and fast rule, but yes.
Well, that's true. You know, it's just hilarious, though, because, if you pay attention, what you're finding out is that the Democrats basically have eaten their own, Chuck. And a big part of their problem is, and I think that, you know, this is one that's you're really starting to tell now. If you look, there aren't really that many young Democrats coming up that, you know, that they're bringing up through the ranks to, you know, be the next generation. Because, I mean, obviously, de Blasio is, you know, old news. And, of course, the best thing they can come up with against her is Hillary Clinton. But it's not surprising. Because what is one of the almost sacramental beliefs of the liberal Democratic establishment? And it's abortion on demand, right?
Yeah. It is a sacrament.
Abortion on demand, which is pretty much a sacrament to them. And that sacrament was made very clear as, you know, during the president's speech on Tuesday night, they talked about and rolled out this idea of a Republican plan of about repealing and replacing the Affordable Care Act. Well, of course, a leak came just on Wednesday. Or came on Tuesday during, you know, right before the speech, it leaked this draft of this Republican bill. And what it would do, part of what it would do would be to block Planned Parenthood, especially from receiving reimbursements for Medicaid because they provide abortions. In other words, doing something we've been trying to do in Ohio for a while now, you know, when everybody talks about how they defunded Planned Parenthood in Ohio, don't believe them because they really didn't, because 60% of what Planned Parenthood brings in is through Medicaid reimbursements.
Right. So we actually expanded it.
Yeah. So what they're trying to do at the federal level through the ACA change is to basically block organizations like Planned Parenthood and other abortion providers from qualifying for Medicaid reimbursements if they provide abortions or counsel for abortions. Chuck, this is just smart use of your money. We don't support abortions. You know, we shouldn't as a government because it's wrong. It's taking an innocent life or a defenseless life. And that we really shouldn't do that. So what happened on Wednesday? Well, Cecile Richards and the Planned Parenthood cadre got about 150, supposedly, and that's a rough number, and nobody's ever verified that, of supporters to go up wearing their pink scarves and all this good stuff to go to the Hill to lobby Congress to bemoan how women will die in the streets if they don't keep getting their fed at the federal trough through this reimbursement. So very interesting because a number of the news organs covered it because, well, first of all, it's Planned Parenthood, and secondly, because they brought a bunch of people from Ohio. And so, you know, you had this situation, of course, they showed this, and of course, it's always a funny thing, Chuck. If you've ever noticed with the liberal media, when it's a leftist group and having a crowd, they always draw in real close to make it look like very dense and thick packed.
Yes.
And when it's a conservative, they take this really big wide angle shot so you can see that there's only, you know, handfuls of people there. Well, if you think about it, 150 people would make a fairly sizable crowd, right? If they're all stuck together.
If they're all crowded together.
Well, I'm looking at this picture that was put up, and it's interesting because it's one of these crowded in close shots, and there it is, you know, saying how big of a crowd this is. Well, you know, again, the other thing you have to have is that you've got to have people who are actually telling the truth.
Well, Barry, if you look at this picture, if it's the one I think you're looking at in the Cleveland Plain Dealer.
In the Plain Dealer, okay.
Okay. If you look at this huge crowd, it's about five rows deep.
Yep, pretty much.
That's it.
Pretty much. So this rally that Planned Parenthood was having outside the Capitol, we're going to as they tweeted out, Planned Parenthood tweeted out, our patients and providers are taking over Capitol Hill today. Not sure that's taking over Capitol Hill. And then you see the picture down below with Cecile Richard talking to one of these, you know, their success story folks. And, you know, Chuck, it's just interesting because you see these folks in their pink T-shirts, et cetera. And then you see the one who's got, like, I don't know how many different shades of different colors are in this person's hair. And I see this at the State House as well when the left, the pro-Planned Parenthood, pro-gay rights folks come in. It really, you know, it's like you guys are not very well making your case. You know what I'm saying? But this one woman talks about, you know, from Cincinnati, oh, I could have lost my ability to have children because I had a yeast infection. And if it hadn't been for Planned Parenthood charging me just $170 out of pocket for a pap smear and for some, you know, basically what would be antibiotics, she would have paid, you know, it would have been so much more elsewhere and she would have lost her ability to bear children.
For a pap smear?
I know. That's what I'm saying. They charged her $170 for a pap smear and a prescription. Now, Chuck, your wife has pap smears, right?
Yeah.
How much does it usually run?
It's fair. It's essentially a little. It's a lab work over an office call, which means it costs maybe $100
at the most.
Yeah.
Okay. So. Planned Parenthood, a lot of these women, because they don't go anywhere else, they don't try, they've been indoctrinated that Planned Parenthood is going to meet all their needs, they go there and they don't know how much this stuff costs most of the time, and they're willing to pay whatever Planned Parenthood tells them that it costs. But, you know, but here Planned Parenthood is sitting there saying, you know, I love this one. Thank you, Cleveland Plain Dealer, for actually getting quotes from Ohio supporters of Planned Parenthood. Gwen Roars of Loveland, which is down near Cincinnati, says, quote, a lot of patients depend on our services. Quote, those services are not available anywhere else. Now, Chuck, think to me, what is the one service that Planned Parenthood provides that the vast majority of hospitals and other doctor's offices do not provide? Abortions.
Yeah.
That's it. I mean, gee, mammograms? Oh, wait a minute. Planned Parenthood doesn't have any mammogram machines. They can't do mammograms. Pap smears? Does your wife go to Planned Parenthood for a pap smear? She goes to your doctor, right?
Yeah, we go to our regular physician, yeah.
And if your regular physician was out on vacation or sick, you could also go to an urgent care if you needed to.
Yeah.
Or go to a hospital.
Yep.
Or go to another provider. Or go to any one of the federally qualified health centers that are popped up everywhere.
Everywhere. Yeah,
everywhere.
There are low-cost or no-cost of federal health care centers all over the place.
Yeah. Now, I find this interesting because this woman says she works as a nurse midwife at Planned Parenthood. Stop and think about that for a minute.
Yeah. A midwife at Planned Parenthood.
Yeah, who says that their services aren't available anywhere else. Okay, first of all, either this woman hasn't done much of a survey of health systems in her area, or she's lying. I mean, that's just really all it gets down to, and I'm sorry, I'm calling it, because this is just absolutely ridiculous. You know, of course, Cecile Richards, for the majority of women in this country, I'd love to see her statistics, Parenthood is part of the solution. Only if the solution includes terminating the life that is growing inside of you because you had sex and you conceived. That's the only way Planned Parenthood is part of the solution.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because otherwise, everybody else can be part of that solution in the healthcare industry.
Well, did you notice in this article, they do the thing, just in case you're wondering, you know, they don't say it this way. Republicans who want to prevent Planned Parenthood from getting federal money are primarily upset because the organization performs abortions, according to factcheck.org. Okay.
Oh, yeah, that is a very reputable site. Now, Chuck, do not denigrate factcheck.org because, you know, they're preaching that they're truthy truth because, well, the liberals say so.
Yes. According to factcheck.org, abortions represented about 3% of its total services and about 10% of its clients had abortions. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, This
is factcheck.org gets their information just directly from Planned Parenthood, who feeds it to them, and then they put it up and act like they vetted it and check it as fact.
Exactly.
It doesn't happen.
If you look at the actual way this statistic is counted, it's the most disingenuous thing you will ever see. Because what happens is that Planned Parenthood unbundles every service that they're peripherally involved in. And in other words, sending somebody off to a federal clinic, they count it as having done a pap smear, a breast exam. They count it as an unbundled service. What service do they leave out of the bundle? The abortions that they perform for a late-term abortion up to $1,500.
$100, that's right.
Okay.
And then if the woman is on Medicaid, they can, and according to the Hyde Amendment, now again, according to supposedly the Hyde Amendment, federal money can't be used to pay for abortions except in cases of rape, incest, or to save the life of the mother. However, even Paul Ryan, the speaker, actually understands this and says that, you know, it still could be going to them, even with the Hyde Amendment in place, even with a federal law prohibiting it, because they get money, quote, and this is what Paul Ryan says, quote, money is fungible. Yes, it is. And they will submit for reimbursement to Medicaid on a number of things in and around the abortion that they never provided services for the woman on in order to get more money. Now, Chuck, it's time. You know, it's time. We've seen the atrocities. We've seen the videos from Planned Parenthood's own mouth talking about how they recruit and select and then carve up unborn babies to sell their body parts for research, how they really are all just about abortion, how they absolutely counsel women who may have been in a situation of abuse or being trafficked or are minors that have been raped. They counsel them on how not to talk about it so that they can go ahead and get their money for the abortion. This is ridiculous. I mean, I know a good pastor friend of mine up in Northeast Ohio that calls them planned predators.
Yeah.
And it fits.
Yeah.
It fits because they are.
Okay.
Cecile Richard walks around there like the angel of death, you know, and let's just be quite honest with it. It's time that the American people stop funding this.
That's right.
If you want to fund Planned Parenthood, take it out of your own wallet. Don't take it out of mine.
Exactly. Now, if you go out to, for instance, I'm going to post an article from Red State. The Washington Post, who is no friend of the pro-life movement, has basically called out Planned Parenthood on this 3% claim. And I just want to read real quick something. The fact checker at the Washington Post basically says, quote, when all services are counted equally, abortion procedures do account for 3% of Planned Parenthood's total services. But there are obvious differences between these services. For example, yes, a first trimester abortion can cost up to $1,500, according to Planned Parenthood website. Yet, an emergency contraceptive pill costs around $45, and a urine pregnancy test costs around $10 at a pharmacy. An abortion is a different type of procedure than a vasectomy or testing for sexually transmitted infections or diseases, or a vaccine for human papillomavirus and so forth. While each service is listed separately, many clients receive multiple services. A woman may get a pregnancy test, birth control, and a pap smear, but she would be counted three times, once for each service, yes, in the annual report. There's the fake. Okay. Yep. Now, it goes on. Such cracked reasoning could be used to obscure the purpose of any organization. The sponsors of the New York City Marathon could count each small cup of water they hand out, some 2 million cups, compared with 45,000 runners, and say they are mainly in the hydration business. Or Major League Baseball teams could say they sell about 20 million hot dogs and play 2,430 games in a season, so baseball is only 0.012% of what they do. Supporters of Planned Parenthood want to use its health services as leverage to preserve its abortions, as if you can't get one without the other. Of course, this is nonsense. This from the Washington Post, a big friend of abortion rights. So
they're starting to understand the falsehood of this whole necessary abortion scenario.
Now,
trying to spin.
I hate to pull the rein back, but we're out of time.
Of course.
That was a good place to end
We'll talk next time about what's going on at the state level, because there's an awful lot of stuff that's happening, including we just got a tax increase.
What else is new? All right. You now know what we think. We want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.